Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies, and sometimes we talk about other stuff. I'm Erin, and where do the girls play softball?
And I'm Erin, and we are growing in numbers every day.
Oh, it's so true. And by we, I mean lesbians and other women who like women.
Yes, it's so true.
And other people who like women.
Yes.
Everybody likes women. I know. We're great.
And you know what? And transgender people did frequent the bar mods.
Yeah. Which is great. Which transgender is lesbians. We're talking about the last call at mods today on the podcast.
Yes. A 1993 documentary.
Yay.
Kind of a change in pace for us.
Yeah, truly. Man.
Don't do documentaries that often normally because documentaries, they kind of cover everything that you need to know. Right?
Yeah.
So then there's not a whole lot of conversation that we can have after. But I feel like with this one, this documentary stood out to me. And why I asked that we talk about it is because it's all about lesbian bar culture, which is something that's pretty topical right now.
And this one, too, it was more freeform. You can tell that they just did a bunch of interviews and kind of made a bit of a narrative over what they had, like, at the end of the day. But there's no, like, narrator or anything like that to kind of, like, guide you through what's happening. It's just, like, we're talking about this, and then it's the last call.
Yeah. I think at some point in this episode, and the documentary definitely touches on this, we're going to have to talk about the AIDS crisis and about police brutality. So content warnings for both of those topics. But otherwise, just a lot of conversation about what happened to lesbian bars and why does it seem like there aren't that many today?
For sure.
Yeah. Last Call at Mods, like I said, it came out in 1993. It chronicles 50 years of lesbian bar history, which is incredible. Specifically, bars that were open from the 40s to the 90s. And it specifically focuses on one bar, Mods, which was in San Francisco. It opened in 1966, and then it closed in 1989, so it was open for 23 years.
Yeah.
The documentary was directed by Paris Poirier, who is now a professor at Santa Monica College. They interviewed the bar's owner, Ricky Steiker, who was a butch political activist and a veteran, as well as the co-founder of the Gay Olympics. And they also interviewed a lot of other employees and regular patrons, including Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, who were two political activists who actually co-founded the very first group that was dedicated to advocating for lesbians' political and civil rights. Yeah. And that group was called the Daughters of Bilitis.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, from what I found, almost everybody who was interviewed in the documentary has passed away in recent years.
Oh, it's so sad. I'm very thankful that we have this footage of them speaking about their experiences in their own words.
I know. The professor who was interviewed, who was the one who told the story about her camp counselor.
Yeah.
She actually just recently passed away. Her stories, for me, were some of the most poignant in the entire documentary.
Yeah, definitely.
Sally Miller Gearhart. She was actually a science fiction author, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And a professor. And she passed away in 2021.
Wow.
She was the first open lesbian that was on a tenure track faculty position at a college.
Wow.
In American history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She also co-wrote The Feminist Tarot, by the way.
Ooh.
According to Wikipedia, one of several tarot divination books on the market that attempted to find alternative meanings within the same symbology to take the tarot and give it a more feminist interpretation.
Yeah. In tarot, there are, if you're going just strictly by, like, traditional meanings, there are a lot of, like, this card means a man in your life, and this card is about your dad, and this one's about a priest in your life, and it's like, I don't really think those apply to me.
This, I feel like this documentary is particularly interesting for highlighting the political and academic works of so many lesbians in the 80s and 90s. I really enjoyed all of the interview footage with Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon.
Absolutely. Oh my God. They're really cute together.
They were a lesbian couple. And like I said, they founded the first ever political and civil rights lesbians group, the Daughters of Bilitis, and worked alongside Harvey Milk. And talked a lot about their experience in publication, because the Daughters of Bilitis also published magazine and literary works as well.
And they show some of the covers from the different publications that they released.
Yes. So the major publication was The Ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, all of their works are archived in the Lesbian Herstory Archive in New York.
Yay. Mm-hmm. It would be great to just...
Podcast field trip.
Yeah, podcast field trip. I don't really know how we would record that. I was thinking about that too, because there are three lesbian bars in New York City: the Cubby Hole, Henrietta Hudson, and then Ginger's also is a lesbian bar. Ginger's is on the Lesbian Bar Project website, and definitely is like a favorite spot of lesbians. I think prior to 2020, when lesbian bars just like weren't quite in the spotlight as much, I think Ginger's applied like more as a gay bar, but then kind of realized that it was more of a lesbian bar, like once that was like kind of brought into the light that there were so few lesbian bars left in the United States.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. There is one lesbian bar that's still open in Milwaukee as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which one?
It's called Walker's Pint, and it's in the Walker's Point neighborhood.
Oh.
But I've never been. I'm kind of curious to go.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we should go.
It looks like just like a regular like sports bar.
Yeah.
From the outside.
I'm on their website. They have lots of colorful things.
Just, I mean, as with a lot of things, which we'll talk about, there's just less, I guess, desire for lesbian-only spaces. I don't know.
Desire.
Demand.
Maybe.
Purchase power? I don't know how to...
Purchase power, maybe. It is interesting. Might be something to talk about later, but, like, with Sammy, friend of the podcast, she was saying that, like, Lex was supposed to be, like, a women-for-women dating app that recently, like... opened itself up to a lot of people like outside of that definition, and then like she was complaining about like people just like coming in like chasers, and like my other friend was talking about getting on dating apps and having to like watch out for like, this is so gross, but like dyke breakers, or like people who are interested in like turning lesbians. Mm-hmm. Basically,
I did not realize that Lex was initially conceived as like a dating site for everybody but cisgender men.
Yeah.
That was the rule. Like, literally everybody but cisgender men can use our app.
Yeah.
And then they did change that.
Yeah, I've never used Lex, but...
I also have not. I feel like it came to popularity after I started dating Jude, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I've heard bad things about Lex, too, from people who use it.
I know her was the other one... which was just supposed to be, like, for, you know, women, like, all women, you know, cis and trans women. And then it opened itself up also to trans men, which this was many, many years ago. And so which was a little bit of a controversy, because it was like, I'm here for women, not for trans men.
I don't remember that. But yeah, you're right. Now that I go on the Her app, I have used Her once upon a time. And I found it to be kind of an interesting app, but I think I maybe used it before transgender men were on Her.
Yeah, and again, this is all secondhand information.
Yeah.
I was already taken at that point, so.
Yeah.
But actually, just from 2 days ago, lesbian dating app Her tells transphobic users to delete their accounts. I love that.
Actually, that's incredible.
Oh my god, actually, and it was a push notification message to transphobes. It's time to delete Her. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. That's actually fucking iconic.
Yeah, Her, when I used Her, and I used it for like a couple months in 2019, in 2020, so it was years ago now. It was actually a pretty interesting dating app, because not only did they have like the local swiping, like Tinder, but they also had just like their own social media network, basically, that was global, right? So anybody could just go and like make posts in like a generalized feed. It wasn't super active, because there weren't a ton of users, but it was active enough that like you could go and like see some kind of interesting posts.
Yeah. That's actually a really interesting idea.
And I feel like Lex is kind of the same. Where you like make posts on like a generalized feed as well. But from what I've heard about from my friends who use Lex, it's very much a mix of people who are very, very horny and looking to hook up, and people who don't want to see anything related to sex on their feed at all. And so then that can kind of add some divisiveness. And this is all just what I've heard secondhand. I'm not an active Lex user.
Yeah. You know. What a mix of people.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at that "don't let the door hit you on the way out." It's so fucking funny.
It's so good.
There also is an article on NBC News from 2019 about how hard it was and still is for lesbians to be on Tinder and like mainstream dating apps, because so many men mark themselves as so many cisgender straight men mark themselves as lesbians.
Oh, which my God.
I feel like I can speak about for years.
Oh my God, all the time. Couples, like a man and a woman looking for somebody to hook up with, would mark themselves as lesbians as well, which really annoyed me, because I was like, it would be like every third person.
Yeah.
And that's in New York, where there's an abundance of women looking for women. You know, back when I was in Michigan, I would get like maybe 3 swipes a day on Tinder, and like one of them would inevitably be either a straight man or a couple. And I was just like, I'm like dying out here.
I'm sick of this. Yeah.
I'm sick of this shit.
And actually, this is a great segue for us to talk too about lesbian bars and the space that they operated in, because it's so difficult to meet other lesbians. Even if you're in the city, it's just hard to find your community. And bars offered a physical space for that to happen in a time when being gay was literally illegal.
Yes.
Yeah. And even beyond the period when it was no longer illegal to be gay, but obviously the community was still facing police brutality.
Of course, they would find other reasons to get you.
Right. But before the advent of dating apps and online communities, how else would you find your community if not going in person and meeting and talking to people?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the flip side of that is that if you're operating in bars, yes, everybody's having fun together and partying, but then that also imbues queer culture with a party life as well, right?
Yes.
And makes drinking and partying the focus of all relationships, which also caused some additional hardships on the lesbian community as well, with sobriety, drinking to the point of illness was brought up in the documentary multiple times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still a problem for all communities.
It still is.
That drinking is such a social thing that if you are sober or struggle with alcoholism, it can be very hard to meet people. And if you decide to become sober, you can oftentimes just completely lose your community.
Yeah. And I feel like in the early 2010s, I was seeing a lot of calls from people being like, we need more queer focused spaces that are not just bars. We need queer coffee shops and spaces that are not focused on partying as well as spaces that are focused on partying. We need to have both.
Definitely.
I feel like I actually don't see that conversation much now in the pandemic era. Now that people just don't go out as in general as much as they did before.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are somebody who's looking for like a queer space to just interact with others that doesn't necessarily have to do with drinking, you know, there are Meetup was one like a website I used when I first moved to try to find like different spaces that I could get into and try to meet people in, or like trying to find an activist group in your area that is queer focused can be a good way to meet people, or like a youth center if that's age appropriate. But all those things, you really got to put yourself out there. And it is kind of, bars are the only thing where, you know, you can walk in and, you know, get a drink and like have a reason to be there. And it's very intimidating to like try to step into a space that is already established, like a meetup group or an activist group, where like bars are really inclusive by nature, I guess. But as long as you're willing to drink.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that is where the coffee shop calls came from, too, where it's like, again, you can come in and get a drink and just sit down and chill.
Yeah,
and I love the idea. Social expectations. And queer coffee shops definitely exist.
Yeah.
And especially, like, if we're talking about just, like, coffee shops with a political focus in general.
There was the Out Bar in Ann Arbor, which it was a bookstore and I think also maybe a cafe during the day. And then it became a bar at night, which is such a cool idea. But that was one of the lesbian or just gay bars that closed during the pandemic. One of many.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sad.
Mods was very prolific and prominent in San Francisco at the time that it was open and had like a crew of regulars and also occasionally some stop and drop in patrons. But from what we saw in the documentary, it seems like that was a little bit less common. Like there was just like a crew of people that were there all the time.
Yeah, they were talking about how they had the regulars and then everybody else.
Yep. And they had their own softball team.
Yeah.
And they did talk about how if you were not a regular and you came in, you would get some glances, right? Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Especially as one woman talked about, if you were perceived as being straight passing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, once they got to know her, it was fine. But she talked about how it was kind of a struggle when she first started going.
Which, you know, it was interesting to talk about because there was this kind of dichotomy between people talking about how they really did want to be so inclusive to everybody and like have it be a space for everybody as long as like you're okay with lesbians. But because of like straight guys coming in and trying to like take over or just beat everybody at pool, which is like such a weird macho thing to do,
yeah,
that they would actually end up being a little bit defensive of outsiders.
Which, fair. They even had their own softball team.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting.
I know.
Oh, the bar had their own softball team.
Well, oh my God, that was like one of my favorite parts about the documentary is that they were saying that before it, because you couldn't be like, where's the lesbian bar? Because that would be a very dangerous thing to say to somebody possibly. So you would say, where are the girls playing softball? And then after the softball match, you would just follow them and see which bar that they went to. And that would be the lesbian bar.
Yep.
Which is incredible. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. But when the bar eventually closed, Ricky Stryker, who was the owner, cited a couple of reasons that led to its eventual closure. So one was that there were just more spaces in general where women could meet. Not even necessarily lesbians, but just like women in general could go meet in other spaces. One thing that they mentioned was like at the time that Mods was first opening, it was not legal for women to be bartenders. So they had to hire male bartenders who were a majority gay men who worked at the lesbian bar and who were friends of the owners.
Uh-huh. It was so, oh my God, in the reasoning behind this, like, obviously it's sexism, but it was just so silly. It was like the men would have to pour the drinks and then the women could take them to the table. They just couldn't pour the drinks. The reasoning behind the law was something like, oh, we're afraid that if a woman is a bartender that she might sedate a man and then take his wallet or something.
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember like, exactly now, but yeah, I remember being like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Two, I mean, and with so much police scrutiny, like the bar had an alarm system where when they would push it, everybody had to stop dancing, like to stop touching anything or anybody, like all hands off, all the lights come on. And then the police come in and see the way they described it. It was like the police are going to come in and see like this crew of lesbians standing perfectly still and not doing anything. But hey, at least they aren't doing anything. You know, there's nothing to incriminate. So yeah, it's kind of weird, but it's not illegal.
There was one woman who was talking about how there was when they would have gay men at the bars as well, that they would just like you would go with like a man dancing with a man and a man dancing with a woman, that the alarm would go off and they'd switch and she'd be like, you've never seen anything so heterosexual.
Yeah. It's like we gave a very convincing performance.
Yeah.
Everybody switch partners really quick. Yeah, that was very interesting. Really? I also found when I was reading about the Daughters of Bilitis, when the Daughters of Bilitis held their first convention in San Francisco, it was raided by the San Francisco police. And part of what they were checking was to see if any Daughters of Bilitis members were wearing men's clothing. So they checked all of the tags on their clothing. They wanted to make sure that women were wearing like dresses, stockings, and heels. which meant that a lot of people had to dress in clothing that they didn't necessarily want to wear. So, like, some of their, like, the Daughters of Bilitis meeting rules were, like, if you were butch, you had to wear women's slacks. You had to find them. And that meant that you can't wear jeans because they only made jeans for men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wild. Absolutely wild.
Part of the reasons why it closed, so there was one, just in general, there were more spaces for women as some of those laws went away and as some of the police scrutiny also went away. At the same time, because they had such a crew set of regular patrons, they were starting to get older. And as she described it, they had become more middle class. More of them had moved out of the city and into the suburbs. More of them had bought houses. And also, a lot of them had begun journeys in sobriety as well. So with that, they just didn't have the patrons to keep the bar open anymore.
Yeah.
I thought it was very interesting when they were talking about differences between lesbian bars and gay bars as well. Particularly, they give kind of a very short background on Harvey Milk's political career and some of the effects of it, and how after Harvey Milk's assassination, after gay people started to gain more rights in America, some of the gay male bars after that point began to become discriminatory by, like, race and gender presentation and disability, and they wouldn't let certain categories of people in.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that that kind of started after gay people started gaining more rights. It made me think about how a few years ago, I mean, now in same gender marriage is obviously legal in all 50 states in the United States, despite the fact that there are occasionally political pushes to once again make it illegal.
Yeah.
But at the time it was like all the people who are fighting for just marriage equality, as soon as they get that, you know that they're going to abandon all the people who need rights beyond that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of what they were starting to see, where it was like the white gay men had, like, gotten some measure of equality, and it was like, well, fuck everybody else. Now we can just have our own crew, right?
Yeah.
And we don't want to let anybody else into that. As opposed to when they were operating in secret, and so everybody who came was obviously welcome because it was literally illegal, right? And everybody had that mutual understanding.
I know. Well, we kind of see that now, too, with, like, the anti-trans movement.
Yes.
I mean, again, this is, like, a completely my biased, but I'd like to think that there aren't that many people on, like, lesbians or gay men on the side of trans exclusionary people, like, trying to push out trans people. But obviously they exist, and it's just because they're like, oh, well, you know, this is like, if we didn't have trans people around, we would be accepted. And that's obviously a million times not true.
Right.
Like, that, and also, it's not true, and that's fucking horrible.
I know, yeah. I feel like that population is, it's a very small but very, very vocal population. And or there are hateful people who are hiding themselves as like, and lying about being gay or lesbian when they're not, you know?
Yeah.
Online.
I do think under that's, the cover, especially online.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to even mention it, but recently, like, in the UK, the, like, anti-trans feminists have been making a lot of noise over there. They have pushed their lesbian members to the front, and they've been getting a lot of hate. And there was a survey in the UK recently that was, you know, talking to lesbians there, and the overwhelming majority of them are not anti-trans. And they're, like, really hating that these, like, anti-trans groups are trying to make it seem like, oh, yeah, lesbians hate trans people, when that's not true.
Yeah.
Lesbians are trans sometimes, you idiots. Fuck, what the hell?
I know. I think it's so interesting, too, that the part of the reason why the bar closed was that more of their patrons are, you know, moving into middle class culture and exiting and moving into the suburbs, when such a heavy part of their discussion was about how the gender pay gap had led to some division between lesbians and gay men in the 80s and 90s. Well, I should say specifically in the 80s, because the bar closed.
Yeah.
In 89. But talking about how, like, because women were paid at about half the rate that men were, a gay male couple would have sometimes four times the income of a single lesbian.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And that disparity in pay led them to have so many more opportunities and ways to get political leverage and ways to move socially that lesbians were not afforded.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I think was also kind of interesting that they touched on a little bit in the documentary was they talked about how at bars for gay men, it was a lot of times about like, you know, cruising and finding a sexual partner and stuff like that. But they didn't mention that the sodomy laws in the United States are what like created cruising culture because men weren't allowed to like, you know, have relations with other men in their own homes, which is what created this culture of like cruising, where you would go out and try to find somebody and you would be in like a semi-public place, like a restroom or a park or whatever.
Yes.
Just to mention that, since it's not mentioned in the documentary.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I also thought was just really interesting that someone in the documentary brought up was that someone was like, with mods closing, you know, this is just yet another thing that is another reduction in lesbian-only spaces or lesbian-centric spaces. And in the 40s to the 70s, there were so many more lesbian spaces than there were in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was, like, the way that they worded it, I was like, I feel like I've heard people say this, like, yesterday about today.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's only continued to lessen over time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the, I mean, that's a great segue to talk about the Lesbian Bar Project.
Yeah, I did want to talk about that, too. So, I don't know too much about the Lesbian Bar Project. Maybe you know more than me. I do know that it's a campaign that was created in 2020 by Erica Rose and Alina Street that was trying to preserve what lesbian bars are left and to try to kind of motivate people to revitalize lesbian bar culture in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also do know that they released a PSA that was narrated by Leah Delaria.
They did.
But I actually have not seen the PSA yet.
And it was sponsored by Jägermeister.
Yes, Jägermeister. Thanks for supporting lesbians, Jägermeister.
Mm-hmm. With the Lesbian Bar Project, because the two lesbian bars were kind of the focus from my knowledge, at least in the beginning, which was the Cubbyhole and then Henrietta Hudson's.
Both in New York, right?
Both in New York, both in the West Village. And Henrietta Hudson's almost closed during the pandemic. And I think they were able to, partially through the Lesbian Bar Project, but also through their own fundraising, raise enough money to stay open. But the Cubbyhole also suffered a lot. I think they got in a little bit of trouble because during COVID, you know, you're not allowed to have like open alcohol on the street, and they were like selling people stuff that they were taking on the street. it was a little bit of a weird time in New York. So they had to, I think, close either because of that or another COVID restriction that they accidentally went against.
Yeah. At the time that the Lesbian Bar Project started, I know that they had identified 15 bars remaining in the entire country.
Yeah.
But since then, I know that two have closed, one in Alabama and one in Pennsylvania. And they've also added a couple ones that they overlooked initially. And then two more bars opened, one in Florida and one in Columbus, Ohio. And so now they consider that there are 23 lesbian bars across the country.
Oh, even actually on their website today, it says 27.
Oh, wow.
I know. I was...
Four more.
That made me happy. Yeah. And again, some of them I think are bars potentially that were, again, overlooked or have like a lesbian owner maybe and weren't identified as lesbian bars initially. But are lesbian bars in actuality.
Yes. And they're doing a docuseries about all of this, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the full docuseries or if all of it's out now, but it is on the Roku channel. I have not watched it yet.
I know, that might be one to watch. Yeah, you should come to New York and we'll go to the Cubbyhole and Henrietta Hudson's and Ginger's and then we'll watch the docuseries.
Okay, perfect.
And you can come too, listener.
Come to New York, meet up at the bar. We'll see you there.
Let's come to the bar. We can compare pictures of lizards.
Why lizards? Just because.
I'm actually thinking comparing pictures of giant turtles, because you said that our first gays meeting will be at the giant turtle cryptid festival. Yes,
I know. I still back think in, like, it would be season so, one. I still think it would be so much fun to go to that, to go to the Turtle Days, or I think it's called, in Churubusco, Indiana.
Yeah.
Man. Giant Snapping Turtle Festival. I would love to go to that.
But yeah, speaking of going to things, have you ever been to a lesbian bar?
I actually have not.
Yeah.
I've been to a couple of gay bars, but never a lesbian-specific space.
Yeah. I was in the Cubbyhole, actually, not that long ago. I went there with my friend, and they had a Save Warrior Nun sticker in the bathroom.
And you were like, yes.
I was like, yo. And they also, somebody had their dog in the bar.
Oh, wow. Of course, a great day for you.
Yeah, great day for me. The first time I went to the Cubbyhole, I think, was during Pride, when I first moved to New York back in 2016. And for me, it was overwhelming to see just so many women in one space, especially the Cubbyhole, which, if you don't know, is absolutely tiny.
Yeah, it looks very small from the picture that I'm seeing.
It's very small. They have a bunch of decorations on the ceiling. They recently renovated, so the bathrooms are a little bit nicer now. And yeah, I don't know. It's like a fun bar. It's cash only, and they don't serve any food. I think that might have actually been another problem during the pandemic. You weren't supposed to serve alcohol without also serving food.
Oh.
And yeah, so one of my favorite memories of being at the Cubbyhole, it was on like a Tuesday, and they had like margarita, like $2 margarita Tuesdays. And so I was there with a friend, and the bartender, there was just one of them, and she got hungry, so she ordered pizza, and then she was just passing the pizza around to everybody. Being like, I'm sorry your drinks are coming so slowly. I'm the only one working today, but have some pizza.
I love
your,
that.
Your margaritas. I've been to Henrietta Hudson twice as well. Once was during that same 2016 Pride festival. I walked into Henrietta Hudson's, and it was so loud that I just immediately walked out.
Just like, nope, not today. Sorry.
I was like, not today. But I've been there on the weekday as well, and it's nice and quiet. They have great drinks. They have some outdoor seating now. It's really quite nice.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because that is something that they talked about in Last Call at Mods, with like, they were like, a lot of the lesbian clubs that are opening as Mods closes, like Mods was a very chill bar that occasionally had some dancing, but for the most part, people just went to hang out. But they were like, yeah, a lot of the other lesbian bars that are open, or just like queer bars in general, are very party focused and have like very loud, like rave music, which like the younger people are into, but us older people don't really want to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, which also brings up an interesting point of like spaces for aging adults, right? And like, right? Where do people go to socialize, especially like our queer elders, and especially after the AIDS pandemic, when so many people lost all of their loved ones and no longer had social spaces. And then on top of that, the bars were closing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tough.
I know.
No, but it is a great question. I think like within society, a lot of the time it's expected that, you know, as you get older, you'll have a partner or you'll have a child, and that will be your life, and that will be your focus, and that will be your community.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are queer and maybe not necessarily going to have children, or for people who are unpartnered, it can be very lonely later in life. And that's obviously, they deserve love just as much as anybody else.
Right, exactly. What else you got?
Honestly, that's kind of it. I think watching this, it was just really nice. Well, first off, I loved seeing the pictures, because they were showing like a slideshow of different photos of the, either what the women were talking about or of the women themselves when they were younger. Mm-hmm. Did you have any like favorite photos that came up that you can think of right now?
I loved how they showed all of the pictures. And I was thinking, like, if you love seeing like vintage pictures of lesbians being really happy, you would like this movie just for that. But no, there was nothing really in particular that stood out to me.
What I really liked is that they show, because it's kind of in a chronological order for the most part. And so they're talking about like the, you know, before the 70s and the fashion then, and, you know, your butch or your femme, you'd be wearing a suit or you'd be wearing something a little bit more feminine. And then once the hippies came around and everybody was like dropping acid, you know, they had the very stereotypical, like, you know, a lot of flowery stuff, the bell bottoms, like flowy shirts and stuff, long hair, and that they were talking about how it became much more difficult to identify like who was a lesbian just based on the style. They had so many great pictures of women wearing like jeans and stuff, and there's this one photo of this woman and she's like posing in her jeans, and then like right by her hip she has a gun, and I was like, what, like, who is this person? I'm obsessed.
Yeah, all of the pictures of the hippie lesbians were excellent. What was it? Just when we watched Go Fish, it was like the touchy-feely sisters of the woodlands.
Yeah.
Yes. Love to see all of that.
I love it, indeed.
But I also really appreciated the older pictures of like the gay and lesbian clubs of like the 40s, where they were like, yeah, like, if we didn't always have music, but we did sit around in our fanciest dress clothes and we did socialize.
Oh my God. It was great too to see these women, that they would have kind of like a photo of them in high school, and, you know, they're all done up in their way, and then it would show them how they are, you know, once they came out and they're in a much more butch outfit. And you can just, I don't know, it just radiated so much joy for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Did you have any just favorite stories that anybody told?
Oh, the one that your quote is from the beginning.
Yes.
The woman. Oh my God.
That was of Sally Miller Gearhart.
It was her college roommate that she fell in love with. Yeah. And then had an affair with. And then her roommate's parents found out about them being together and sent her off to some...
It's like to Sweden.
Yeah, to Sweden or something. And she wrote Sally a letter about it. And at summer camp, she was reading it and crying by the side of a riverbed. And her camp counselor came up and said, "We're growing in numbers every day."
Yeah, you know, just a reassuring...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what an amazing moment, because she was saying that she's crying because she
felt so alone. You know,
she felt alone, and there somebody was, and to be like, "I see you, and you're not alone."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that one. I really also enjoyed the story about when Janis Joplin came to visit the bar.
Oh my God, yes. That was fucking wild.
And one of the regular patrons, I believe it was, maybe she was one of the employees, was talking about how she was like, "I'm going to sing Janis's song in front of her." And she did. And I can't remember if Janis Joplin was like, you killed it in like a negative way or a positive way.
I know. I think maybe she was so jazzed about it that I was like, is this positive? I think it was supposed to be negative, that she was trying to sing this Janis Joplin song and she was, you know, singing her heart out. And then Janis Joplin passes a note down to her that said, like, "It took me this many years to write that song, but it only took you 2 minutes to kill it."
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed the story. I think it was Del Martin and Phyllis...
Lion,
yeah, who were talking and saying that when they first got together, you know, Del was more butch, and so Phyllis was like, "Okay, I guess I gotta be femme, and, you know, my mom always made dinner for, or breakfast for my dad, so I guess I'll do that." And she did it for like maybe up to a week, if that, and Del was like, "I don't want your breakfast." And Phyllis was like, "Well, I don't like doing this anyway, so I guess that's fine."
Yeah, and she talked about, she was like, "I expected, you know, that as the butch, she would mow the lawn and take out the trash and go to work."
Yeah.
And none of that happened. So then I ended up doing all the gardening, but it's okay because I liked it. Yeah. And then showed a picture of her like being really happy in her garden.
I know.
Yeah.
I just love that because it's just so funny. And even to this day, I think it's still true that, like, you know, my partner is very clearly more butch than I am. But, like, as soon as we both see an insect, we're, like, screaming our fucking heads off.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah, I don't know. That spoke to me.
I think sometimes, too, that's a misconception that a lot of people who are not in the lesbian community have about butch and femme relationships. Yeah. Where it's, like, you expect that heterosexual norms are perpetuated perfectly when they're never, it's never like that.
Yeah.
And two, I think that Phyllis also talked about how she came into the relationship with that assumption, because before meeting Del, she didn't even know what a lesbian was. And then as soon as she found out that Del was a lesbian, she was like, oh, well, isn't that neat? I was like, so curious about her. And, you know, and then it like that her coming out opened a whole world for Phyllis and caused them to start their relationship. Yeah.
It also reminded me, and this is so crazy that this happened, like, when it did. I think this must have been, like, maybe 2012 or something, where I ended up coming out to my college roommates. And one of my roommates, who was a very sweet but very naive person with, I think, a very, like, a traditional family structure, she was like, can I ask you a question? I was like, yeah, sure. And she was like, if you go out to dinner, who pays? Like, because you're both girls. And I was like, that's your question?
That's your question? Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Split it.
Whoever. We split it. Whoever. Yeah.
Yeah. I was...
Who cares?
Who cares? Yeah. I think that was funny for me, because even when I dated guys, I was like, I don't want a man paying for me.
Yeah. Well, not a whole lot to say other than that physical spaces are really important, even today when we have the internet, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
It's harder in the pandemic era, where a lot of us are still not going out to the degree that people were going out before COVID.
Yeah, as well, I love this, that this was made, because it's a really excellent time capsule for, like, what was happening at the time and the history that was going on from the 40s to the 70s. And it's, because it's one thing to read about this stuff, and it's so much more poignant to just hear it from these people and through the lens of a queer filmmaker themselves, like, wanting to tell the story.
I think that this is a really important piece of lesbian history that not a whole lot of people have seen or even heard about. So I would recommend taking a look at it. If this is your first time hearing about Last Call at Mods, you should go give it a watch. It's on Amazon Prime for like $4 to rent. I couldn't find it anywhere else.
I couldn't either. I was going
to
say.
I was trying to see if I could just get it on YouTube to rent. Yeah. And it's nowhere else, but...
At least it's somewhere.
Okay, well, do you want to just kind of wrap up early? Kind of a shorter one.
Yeah, kind of a shorter one. That's fine. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. If you feel like it, you can follow us on Twitter, @GaysGays. We are going down with the ship because there's no better option but fuck Elon Musk and fuck Twitter in general.
Yeah, tragic.
@GaysGays is the best place to find out about our updates in case... my computer explodes again or something.
forgot to mention all of that, but that did happen. Oh my God.
I know. Yeah, I was really hoping that I got my computer back like a couple days after Easter, and I was like, I really wish I got it back on Easter so I could say she has risen.
Oh my God.
You know, love a little bit of sacrilege, you know? But yeah, @GaysGays, it's the best place to get updates. You can also tweet with us, and you can slip or slide into our DMs to give us any thoughts, ideas, or recommendations. We're also available at Erin at gaysgays.com, again, for anything you want to tell us. If you want, we can read it on the podcast, or you can also keep it secret, and we'll just share it amongst the two of us.
Yes.
Additionally, if you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it. We would really appreciate that. Many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for allowing us to use their songs Look in Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You can and should buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com, but you can also stream it on Spotify. Next week, we're going to be doing Stud Life. Woo!
I know, I'm very interested to see how this goes. Yeah. Indie film, stud lesbian, gay best friend, they have drama.
Woo!
Yeah.
As a gay person, I love a little bit of drama.
I know. Yeah, me too.
And I love a stud. Yeah. Until then, I'm Erin.
And I'm Erin.
And we're gay. That's all.
Goodbye.
Bye.